But I argue that we should put reinstitute Looking Glass and put it on the back of the moon, where it would be totally secure. And it would do another thing, too. You saw the headline today coming out about large asteroid headed towards us again.
2014, maybe.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that upsets me more than that are the ones that said, gee, we just saw one go by.
Yeah, exactly. And that's happened. That's happened a lot.
Yeah. So the notion of having outposts in space where we could potentially see these things coming a lot earlier and potentially, you know, interact with them or move them off course, I think would be a positive thing to do. Remember your predecessor's book with Strieber on, you know, the coming superstorms, and we are seeing an increase in the hostile weather. Well, if you had an outpost on the moon, then you've got something that's going to survive no matter what happens or how catastrophic
theoretically you should
attack or incident happens on the Earth.
Yeah. How many people would you have up there with that?
Well, I think it's premature to say how many. My scope for doing this in space, I do think we're going to see manned space in a realm different from, you know, what we planned for. A year or so ago, I guess maybe 2 years ago, Bob Bigelow and I went out to Space Command, and we're talking to them, and the long-range planning folks were talking a 20-year horizon, and it, as far as they were concerned, the ISS was it, you know, with about three people up there.
Yeah.
And we see something quite different. We think manned space is coming much more quickly. It's going to be led by civilian industry, so you're going to see a lot more folks out there.
And profit.
Yes. And from a military perspective, I think it's wrong to look at, oh, we're just going to put up a number of manned satellites, because they are vulnerable to ground attack, and that's why I mentioned the back of the moon. But I think you don't put them up as isolated space stations, but you launch them very much like carrier battle groups, where they're surrounded, protected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a carrier battle group has 360-degree protection in all directions.
Absolutely.
Right? Above,
absolutely,
below, to the sides and whatnot. And I think you do a similar sort of thing. You're not launching individual satellites. You're launching, you know, battle groups.
Do you see the day where we might send up crews that will confiscate other countries' satellites and disable them? Laser them, maybe?
I don't know that you have to do that. We can do that. Right now, we can do that from the ground.
With lasers?
And, well, there's a number of systems.
I mean, we have something that powerful already?
Oh, yeah. That's not a problem. The advantage of using directed energy from the ground up, and it's probably more like high-power microwaves, is that you can put any amount of power that you need behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can shoot up. And that's why I mentioned before putting Looking Glass on the back of the moon, because nobody can hit it there.
That's right.
So it remains, you know, invulnerable to directed energy systems, no matter how powerful they are.
John, have you ever witnessed a test of something like this, a high-powered laser or pulse? And if you did, tell us what happened. Did you ever see anything? You have, haven't you?
My last job as the Director of Advanced Systems Concepts for Army Laboratory Command, I had all of the tactical directed energy that the Army was involved in. That included lasers, microwaves, and particle beams. So, yeah, I was obviously involved.
Well, can I get you to tell me something? What was the one? What was the wow test, the one that just even shook you when you saw it happen?
I haven't seen that happen. I was more on the other side, that why aren't we getting there faster?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there have been some big advances that have taken place in the last few years. When I was in, we were looking at using lasers in an air defense mode. And now remember, I'm talking about the Army, so we got folks on the ground by and large. And the problem was that in the lower atmospheric levels, particularly around sea level, you just couldn't get through the air. You had things called thermal blooming. And so as the energy would go in there, dust particles and all that would cause it to bloom. And at about 3 kilometers, you were near exponential power levels to get through that, which meant that aircraft with missiles could shoot farther than you could with your directed energy system, so you just couldn't get there from here. They have now done extensive work on something called adaptive optics, and claims are, I mean, I haven't actually seen the test, but the claims are that you can get out, you know, tens of kilometers with pinpoint accuracy. And in fact, we talk about in the book the advanced tactical laser, because this is a system that's that is under development, and they hope to do a 4-inch spot at 20 kilometers.
Is there anything out there where you would just flip a switch and it would create some kind of sound or something where thousands of people in its path would just be rendered useless?
Not that I'm aware of. There are certain work, pieces of work being done on, you know, acoustic weapons, but you know, the magic sound one is an area that, frankly, I think we've looked at, but you just haven't found something that works. You know, particularly a one size fits all. The human organism is extremely resilient, and we come in a large range of sizes, shapes, and susceptibility. And that's been one of the problems. You know, I've worked heavily in the non-lethal weapons, and to find systems by which you can incapacitate large numbers safely is just not something that we've really come up with yet.
Other countries, are they close to us in this kind of technology?
It depends on what you'd have to describe this kind of technology. There are certain areas.
Anybody as advanced as we are with some of this?
Well, again, it depends on what you're defining.
So some areas, yes, some areas, no. Huh?
Yeah. In high-power microwave, for instance, when we were looking at pulse power, the United States was not the leader at the end of the Cold War. Some of the things the Soviets had done were very advanced, and particularly in the ability to pump out a lot of power. That was an area of expertise that was there. I think last time around we talked about the incident in Moscow and
yes,
the use of incapacitating agents. Clearly, we know how to do that, but I think it's one that they've taken several steps farther than we have. And as I probably mentioned, and I actually applaud those efforts, and I think our notion of trying to paint broad brush that all chemicals are inherently bad is another one of these areas that's just incongruent thought.